This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 312 in the series. This session shares the full school Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, July 14, 2020. The meeting was conducted via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirement of this pandemic period. School Committee Chair Ann Bergen opens the meeting. Each person who speaks is announced. The show notes contain links to the meeting packet and to the individual documents received. The recording runs just under an hour and a half, approximately 1 hour and 28 minutes. So let's listen to the school committee meeting of July 14.
Of Governor Baker's executive order, suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law. The public will not be allowed to physically access this school committee meeting. Members of the public can access the meeting via remote conference. And just as usual, what I'm going to do is just take a remote attendance, just for the record. So if you could just say here or present when I call your name. Jen D'Angelo?
Present.
Tim Keenan?
Here.
Judy Pfeffer?
Here.
Mary Jane Schofield?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Denise Spencer?
Here.
Elise Stokes?
Here.
And Ian Bergen is here. Okay, very good. And as is customary, we begin each meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance, and I think we have our flag ready.
Yes, let me share my screen.
All righty. Are we standing?
Can you see it?
There we are. Okay, I'm going to ask if we could rise.
Okay.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic
for which it stands,
one nation,
under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. That's very good. If we could pause just for a moment of silence. Thank you. Review of agenda. Does it look okay to everybody?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Superintendent's report. Dr. Ahern.
Sure. I have two things for you tonight. The first is that this week is customarily the Massachusetts Association of School Superintendents Executive Institute. And based on the pandemic and the closures, as you know, large gatherings are prohibited, but they have moved what is typically a three-day conference into two abbreviated days, and we are meeting virtually. So the first day was held today, and the second day will be held tomorrow. And I was joined by Dr. Edwards and Mr. Jagir in attending the virtual sessions. The focus of today has been on reopening school. Topics included technical aspects about opening, such as safety standards, scheduling, legal matters, such as collective bargaining and situations with employees. A bigger focus of some of the breakout sessions also included aspects of more adaptive aspects of the challenge ahead, including social and emotional well-being of students and staff, as well as one that I found particularly helpful was one on communication and empathetic communication from district leadership and school-based leaders. Today's keynote was delivered by a woman named Dr. Romy Rushtag, a traditionally trained neurologist with board certification in integrative medicine. And her focus was very much on self-care and modeling self-care practices through the pandemic. Tomorrow's professional development has a different focus, and the day will be focused on equity and racial justice. The keynote speaker is Douglas Brinkley, the Catherine Zanoff Brown Chair in Humanities and Professor of History at Rice University. He is also the history commentator for CNN and a contributing editor to Vanity Fair magazine. There will be breakout sessions and panel discussions later in the day, and the conference will conclude with remarks from Commissioner Riley. So we look forward to another good day of professional learning tomorrow. Very practical And I think we all walked away. We debriefed a little bit today and walked away with some really practical tools that we'll be able to apply immediately. My second update is just in talking with Pete Fasciano from Franklin TV, wanted to share that their video on demand is up and running. And I will put the link in my superintendent's report, which goes out via district news tomorrow. The school committee meetings that are being recorded can be accessed here. And I guess I wanted to note, especially the final version of the class of 2020's graduation has been posted and can be viewed from their on-demand site. And later tonight on the agenda, I'll be giving an update related to the reopening planning that's happening. And I've asked, and they have agreed to clip that part just as a single topic, so that the community can go back and watch that as a standalone piece from this evening, so that others can access it. And that's my update.
So Sarah, you find that the conference, though, even though it's done remotely, that it's okay? Is it effective? Are you know, it's kind
of not the same.
It's not the same.
You know, I think we really enjoy the social aspects of getting together with colleagues and seeing people that we know and perhaps have worked with in other districts and other capacities. There's a lot of time, whether it's during a meal or in between sessions, where you can have some more casual conversations and you can know what's going on in each other's districts, so you can bump into people and just ask some incidental questions and learn together, learn from each other. So that part was missing, but I do appreciate all of the work that the MASS Professional Development Committee put into the conference, making sure that we still had some professional learning at a time that I think is really critical, where we're trying to take on some really important and really challenging aspects of our work. So I really appreciated that they continued with the agenda. It was very much modified. This is not a format that you can spend. The conference is typically 3 days, and the sessions run from 8 o'clock in the morning actually into the evening. You know, this is not something that you can sustain for more than a couple hours at a time. But I appreciate that they continued forward with some planning and provided it to us.
No, but I mean, obviously two very timely, important topics. So that was good that you did that. Yeah, good. Okay, guest presentations, we have zero. Let's move on to discussion action items.
Okay.
Policy first readings.
So you have three policy first readings. Mr. Jagir could not be here tonight when we adjusted the schedule from the 21st to the 14th. So I'll set this up and then I guess defer to MJ if she wants to add anything or other members of the policy subcommittee. But there are three policies here related to transportation that are being recommended for movement to a second reading. It is policy EEA, student transportation policy, EEAR, transportation policy and responsibilities, and EEAG, student transportation in private vehicles. The first two are revisions, and the third policy is a new policy that came from the MASC suggested policy manual.
MJ, did you want to add anything on that? Or
okay, the student transportation in private vehicles, EEAG, it isn't a new policy to us. I mean, significantly different wording.
My apologies. I'm sorry, MJ.
That's okay. No, I just wanted to make that clear, Sarah. That, you know, the previous policy had, you know, strictly forbidden the transportation of any students by teachers or administrators. And this, what you have in front of you, it clearly defines when it is okay for a student to be transported by an administrator or teacher. And it's very clear that this has to be authorized by the superintendent and also approved by the parent or parents. So it's crystal clear. And, you know, what we needed to spell out was that, no, students aren't supposed to be just taken by a teacher. Oh, you need a ride? Sure, no problem. I'm going that way. That is not allowed. Unless, of course, it's approved by the superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
So, as Sarah mentioned, the two other policies, just minor revisions. And the second one is actually the regulations that Lucas had spoken with Miriam about. So Miriam, do you have anything to add to that?
I will just add that I did review that with Lucas Jaguar, and we talked about some of the minor changes to the titles. And otherwise, yes, it does in fact reflect the guidance and the regulations for transportation in effect in the state. Thanks.
Thank you. I have a question.
Okay, Judy, go ahead.
My question is on the second one, the EEAR, talking about the responsibilities. I didn't see anything in there about the responsibility to disinfect the buses after the first run in the morning and after the one in the afternoon taking the kids home.
So I will tell you that as part of the reopening task force that Dr. Ahern is going to address later on in the presentation, there will be language relative to transportation that will address disinfecting protocols, as well as other safety measures that we will take when buses roll in the fall, whatever that looks like at this point. We are still awaiting guidance from the Department of Ed.
But that will address who's going to be responsible for it, whether it be the bus company or the school department, correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Good. Okay, anything else, MJ? Oh, Jen, go ahead.
Just a quick question. Is that normal to have the business manager do transportation and look at routes and problem solve?
My understanding in most districts, that is the role of the business manager or the business administrator. It is customary for that person to either do that themselves or have someone in their office who does that and works directly as a liaison with the transportation company or the vendor. We do currently have a transportation coordinator who is part-time working in my office remotely at this point. But she does oversee the routing and works closely with a vendor to resolve routing issues and that kind of thing.
Oh, okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
So we do, I would entertain a motion then to recommend moving the following policies to a second reading, EEA, EEAR-R, EEAG. I'm asking for a motion.
So moved.
Okay. Second, MJ. Okay. Any further discussion and questions? Okay. Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. All those in favor of.
Okay.
And then I will. Vote? Yeah. All those in favor. I will ask Jen D'Angelo.
Yes.
Tim Keenan.
Yes.
Judy Ponfeffer.
Yes.
MJ Schofield.
Yes.
Denise Spencer.
Yes.
Elise Stokes?
Yes.
And Ann Bergen, yes. Motion carries, 7-0. Okay.
Thank you.
Next, policy second reading adoption.
This policy is coming to you for adoption through a second reading. It is policy ECAF, security cameras in schools. There was a bit of feedback from the FEA, and so there has been some additional language added related to security cameras not being used to conduct observations or monitor instruction, which is consistent mm-hmm. with the educator evaluation model and system that we have. So this is being recommended for adoption.
Okay. Could we have a motion then to recommend adoption of the following policy, ECAF, security cameras in schools?
So moved.
Okay, we'll say Judy, and then we'll say second, MJ, and I know. Did you want to be the one, MJ?
Yeah, it is policy.
Oh, no, it sounded like a tie, so I went with the you know, the loudest. So it sounded like a tie to me, so I kind of just kind of guessed.
Please allow MJ to do the motion.
Okay, and then we'll have Judy as the second, and then let's do a roll call vote. All those in favor.
Discussion? Can we have a discussion?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead. Okay. Go ahead, Jen.
I guess the only thing I'm looking for is just clarification. It just says observation and monitoring. So do we need to add the word staff in there? Because I know that we do use the cameras for observation of like common areas in the discipline practices. So do we need to identify that? Where is that again? At the last sentence there, where that's highlighted in green, it just says observation and instruction. But I know that we do use observation as far as observing in the event that there's a discipline investigation. So do we just need to identify staff observations and instruction? Or it doesn't matter?
Sorry, Jen, where are you? Are you at the end of the third paragraph?
It's highlighted in green.
Yep. Cameras will not be used to conduct observations or monitor instruction.
Right, so should it say staff?
I think they mean observations as far as formal observations for, by a supervisor. That was coming from the union, that language. I know what you mean, though, staff observations. We mean like a formal observation, right, MJ and Denise?
Yeah.
So like you can't use write up a formal supervisory observation based on a video.
Yeah, I think the addition of the word staff may make it a little clearer potentially versus just the general observation of arrival at school, for example, with a camera in a hallway.
That makes sense.
Or even add in there the use of evaluative observation.
Evaluative observations.
Yeah, so maybe that just to clarify it.
Gotcha. Because it was definitely clear in our...
The word evaluative?
Yeah, because it was clear in our discussion. So if it's not clear in the policy, then that's a problem. So if we have to explain ourselves, then that's a problem. So yeah, that sounds like that makes sense. To me, at least.
Any other further?
Perfectly good sense.
All right. So, any other further before we maybe change the wording? Anything else? Okay. So, we would have the motion to recommend adoption of the following policy, but adding evaluative discussion. I mean, the word evaluative into the policy. So, given that, then the motion will come. Is there a motion to recommend adoption of that policy?
Yes.
And that would be, MJ, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Judy, second. Okay, any further discussion? All right, seeing none, the vote will come on that motion. And again, roll call vote. Jen D'Angelo.
Yes.
Kim Keenan.
Yes.
Judy Ponfeffer.
Yes.
Mary Jane Schofield.
Yes.
Denise Spencer.
Yes.
Elise Stokes.
Yes.
Ann Bergen, yes. Motion carries 7-0. Okay, moving along. Dr. Hearn, school committee resolution.
School committee resolution. So in your packet is the school committee resolution, anti-racism resolution, which came from MASC. And it was discussed at the last community relations subcommittee meeting. And put on your agenda tonight for action, where it is being recommended for adoption.
So at this point, I'm going to ask for a motion to recommend the anti-racism resolution. Is there a motion to adopt the school committee resolution?
So moved.
Okay, MJ Judy, is there a second?
Second.
Okay.
May I ask that you read this resolution?
Yes, I would be happy to do that, MJ. Yep, that makes a lot of sense. And just that the final part, which makes it's important, is resolved that Franklin Public Schools and all the school districts in the Commonwealth must guarantee that racist practices are eradicated and diversity, equity, and inclusion is embedded and practiced for our students, families, faculty, and staff. That is the resolution. So I would entertain, we have a motion and a second, discussion, questions. Anyone?
I'm sorry, what did you ask?
Oh, I just asked, we have a motion and a second to adopt the anti-racism resolution. I didn't know if there are any questions, discussion before we take a vote. MJ?
I'd just like to say that the resolution as written by MASC, for all intents and purposes, for this day in 2020 is fine. The recommendations that were made for modification of the resolution by a group in Franklin, those suggestions will certainly be considered.
Mm-hmm.
At a workshop that we're going to have later this summer. So right now, this is where we're going with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with it.
Any other questions, comments, discussion? Jen, go ahead, Jen.
Just a quick question again, sorry with my quick questions. I know that in the spring, no, fall, sorry, don't even know what season we're in right now. There was a town resolution that was passed similar under the premise of, equal treatment and whatnot. I'm wondering how in alignment that is with this. And is that town resolution something we should also consider for adoption, with a revised version recommending school committee just to ensure continuity and consistency across town agencies, boards, and committees? And I know.
Go ahead, MJ.
The resolution that was passed in the winter, Mr. Mercer was kind enough to include the school committee in that resolution. So there's really no need for us to, pass our own version.
Perfect. Thank you, MJ.
And I think, too, we have obviously the educational equity policy that Dr. Hearn referenced, that's our file, JBB, that speaks to that as well. I was, happy to say that we have that as well in our policy. So that's a good, it's a nice added plus to what we're talking about. And I know for me, I just wanted to follow up too, that for me personally, that I think we're all committed to the MASC anti-racism resolution, and that we've already, as MJ alluded to, we've set up a summer workshop. We brought in a facilitator from MASC to help us work through this resolution. So I think that I can speak obviously for all of us when we say this is something that we're very, very committed to, and that we will have lots of thoughtful conversation around the best way for the schools to implement this. So it's important to us. It's very, very important. We, like I said, we've already set it up for our agenda in the summer. And, so I just need to reassure people that this is something that we all, based on our conversations, are taking very, very seriously. So that was all I was going to add to it. I didn't know if there was anything else that anyone wanted to say.
Ann?
Yeah, go ahead, Denise.
Well, and I just wanted to reiterate, as discussed at the Community Relations Subcommittee meeting, like you had mentioned, we're going to bring this to the summer workshop and discuss a model similar to the Substance Abuse Task Force, creating some kind of task force that will provide accountability and transparency to the school committee, to the community. So I just wanted to reiterate that we are working towards this. We'll be working over the summer, and we appreciated the amended resolution. And I just want to reassure the community that we're listening.
Yeah, That's a given. That you're absolutely right, Denise. I'm glad you're reinforcing that, because that's certainly the message we all want to get out, and how important this is to all of us. And it's really, and again, being on the Community Relations Subcommittee, there was never a question of adopting it, as far as I was concerned. It's just how we implemented the resolution. What does that look like for the schools? Because as we've talked about a million times, anti-racism is a community issue, you know, and we have a huge role to play. And then so does the town council and the faith-based community and the business community. So it's for us to say, okay, what is it that the schools are going to do, you know? And so it's a huge undertaking, and we're taking it very, very seriously. But I'm glad you mentioned that, because it is something that's very, very important for the community and all the people who are out there working on this issue, that we support them. So I'm really glad you brought that up, Denise. Is there anyone else? Oh, yeah. Somebody else?
Go ahead, Elise.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Elise. Sorry.
Thanks. Sorry, Tim, I didn't know you had your hand up.
No, please go.
Oh, sorry, Tim, I couldn't see you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead, Elise, and then Tim.
We're just extra awkward tonight. I think that, you know, as you're saying, this is really important in the community, and we definitely hear that. I think a lot of us have been having a lot of conversations along these lines, especially over the last couple months. The urgency's really increased, and I think when urgency increases, it helps with motivation, and it helps setting the wheels in motion. And I know that there are a number of people in the community that really wanted to add a line into this resolution for MASC about accountability for us to create a task force and sort of put a timeline on that. And I definitely hear them, and I understand that. I'm a person, I like things to be concrete and black and white. I think my perspective of this MASC resolution is that this was sent out to all the districts in the state, and we're really looking for, you know, a state voice on this. And as others have said, that I like the way it's written right here for the purpose that it serves. But I also think that a task force, I'm not on the substance abuse task force, but is it similar to SWAC? So is the setup similar to SWAC?
It's very similar, Elise. It is, it's made up. It has some community representatives on it. It has teachers, principals, not too many now community members. There were police initially on it. They haven't been coming as often, but it is a community kind of a forum, and it is effective. Yeah.
Yeah, and I could imagine, just with my experience on SWAC, it's similar. You know, there's school committee members, there's district central office, there's there, every level of administrators as far as buy-in goes, and there's plenty of community, you know, community input and community members involved, and it's a really big group, but we sort of split off into subcommittees.
Yep.
Really productive, because sometimes when the group's too big, it's just hard to get anything done with all the different voices. So really prioritizing the big areas that need to be addressed, and sort of having a timeline for that, and breaking off into smaller groups, I think could be really effective, and to really have all the stakeholders involved in this group. So I think the conversation could be separate from the resolution. It probably is. Maybe I'm taking us off on it where we shouldn't be. But I guess my question for you, Anne and Sarah, probably, is how does that happen? Like, I wasn't here when SWAC was created. How does that happen? Is that a school committee, we come up with it and present it to the district, or is it the superintendent comes up with it and presents it to the school committee, and then we vote on it? Like, what's the process for that?
Well, I know for the, and Sarah can jump in too, for the Substance Abuse Task Force, Peter Light started that through the central office, and that was his initiative back a few years ago. And then he, you know, people had suggestions of whom should be on that committee, and that's really how it went. We didn't vote on it as a school committee, but we report regularly on it, and people, you know, so it's that whole sort of accountability and monitoring piece that comes in, what's happening, and very much broke up into subgroups, and everybody contributed in different ways. It was a community group, there was, you know, there's a school group where the principals were working, there's a communication group, policy group. So, but it was done. That's how it was done. It was not established by the school committee. It was actually Peter Light who, in the whole school mission around the whole substance use and mental health, issue that we've been dealing with in the community for a few years. So I don't know if Sarah wanted to add anything to that. But
yeah, I think I would just add, so I think it would be something similar to what Peter had started, something that I would start out of central office. But I know that there's an understandable interest in this idea of transparency and communication and accountability. As a superintendent, I report to you as school committee members. You hold me accountable through the evaluation process. There is a goal setting process that happens at the beginning of the year, and an expectation about our progress as a district. It took a little bit of a different course this year because of the closure, and we had some other items to tackle through the spring. But there is an accountability component and a reporting component regularly to the school committee about our progress towards both my individual goals as superintendent, as well as the district goals that you do have an opportunity to approve in the fall. So so I see it kind of folding in there while having kind of that that regular transparency piece and community involvement.
Gotcha.
Good. Tim, you wanted to speak.
Yeah. I just, so what I'm hearing is that everyone is recognizing this as an extremely important topic, and that's very positive to hear. I guess what I'm hoping to hear, and I'm not sure if maybe Ann or Sarah or both of you, is we know that there's a lot of crazy stuff happening with COVID and reentry into school. And there may be concerns that, there's a lot of different topics to take on. And the reentry to school is certainly going to get a ton of attention. And so I guess I'm looking for some kind of reassurance that this is going to remain an important topic that we put effort towards and seek action to come out of it. Mm-hmm. And that it won't kind of fall to the back burner because other things are going to come up and kind of push it out of the way. So I know we've got it in our, part of the reassurance that I'm hearing, and I'm wondering if you Ann or Sarah maybe have anything further, but part of the reassurance that I'm hearing is that this is part of our summer retreat agenda.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's anything else beyond that to just kind of give reassurance to the school committee members as well as the community that we recognize there's a lot of stuff going on that is also very important, but we also see this as extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to hit the back burner.
Tim, can I just, I speak to it a little bit, just maybe just having a little history, sometimes it helps, but I was thinking back to 5 years ago when the whole issue in the community then was substance abuse. I kind of just put some notes down, and that was the overriding issue. And there were 300 people who packed the auditorium that day. But it was the schools, that's still an issue out there, but it's the schools who were on the front lines in that fight, and they continue to be. Again, following up on what Elise said, we established a substance abuse task force. We implemented social emotional curriculum, understanding the link between mental health and substance use, the need for early intervention and treatment. We put in professional development, wrote grants, monitored implementation through district improvement and school improvement plans. And at every single public budget hearing, Dr. Hearn has made the public aware of the needs, the mental health needs. That was 5 years ago. That issue was the biggest issue in our community. We have stayed on the front lines in that. That's the part, I think, the history of the way we work together as a committee is not to let these issues go away. We didn't do it then. And I know I can reassure from just listening to all of us talking that that's not going to happen. And I think it's a valid, important point that you're bringing up. But I just have to keep saying is that, and the other piece I'm going to keep saying it out there alone is that we can't do this alone. When we need the town council to support funding, because right now we have, a $3 million budget gap. And like Tim said, we have 5,000 students that when schools reopen that we have to deal with their health and safety and the teachers. So you're right, we have those other issues, but we're not letting the other stuff go. And I think that's an important thing that we have to reassure the community that this will stay important. We don't just lose our attention span and give up to the next crisis or thing that comes along. We don't have a history of doing that. We commit to it. So I just having the history on that and how we've dealt with that. And, you know, when I look around, there were 300 people in that auditorium that day, but there aren't 300 people anymore, but we're still there. You know what I'm saying? So it's sort of that idea is that we've stepped up to the plate. I know we will as a committee. We're committed to it. And I think it's really good, Tim, that you brought that point up and to say, you know, we don't quit. We don't have short attention spans. You know, we're going to stay with this. But we do, and I do say, and I think you're absolutely right, Tim, there's this pressing issue right now that the superintendent has, which was why I was hesitant to say in a week we could agree to a task force. My only hesitation was we're dealing with this huge thing right now. We need to be thoughtful and deliberative about an anti-racism resolution. But right now we got a deal today, right today, with getting these kids back to school, but we're not putting this on the back burner. So I know I'm, again, pontificating, but I just wanted to reassure people that we stayed on that issue and we will, you know. So, Sarah, I don't know if you wanted to add anything. I'm kind of going off there a little.
Yeah, I'd love to jump in on that because I think it's a really great question. You know, we certainly have, I think, some really important challenges ahead that are needing to be addressed. And as we think about our district goals, I guess one, it may sound strange, but one reassurance that I feel like I ought to put out there is that I think we need to take a critical look at what we're doing and take some things off the table so that we can make space for the priorities that we're determining we need to focus on as a district. And then find those places, and I think that there are plenty, where the goals are mutually reinforcing of each other. And my example will be just today, although it appears like the superintendent's conference has split these two topics into day one and day two, the session that we attended, and I think all three of us attended it with Jessica Minahan, who's a board certified behavior analyst. The session that she presented today was all about social emotional learning and addressing trauma among students. And she provided an incredible set of resources. One of the things that's fantastic about Jessica is that she's very practical and very relatable and very accessible to educators. And she provides tools that they can use immediately. So we walked away with a multi-page hyperlinked document that provides tools to address social emotional learning and trauma, which we know we need to be prepared to do when students come back to school. And part of that trauma, in addition to the coronavirus and the pandemic, is certainly related to the racism and the videos that students are exposed to and processing at home with families, but don't have many of the resources at hand to support them in the form of counselors and trusted adults and educators in the school system. So these are the conversations that are being had and planned for as we think about how we are going to bring kids back to school in the fall and recognize that it has been a very trying and very stressful spring and that we need to pay attention to their holistic needs coming back in. So that's just one example. And I will share too that it's on the minds of our educators and it is part of the awareness and conversation that they are having. So finding ways to sort of have these be mutually reinforcing, we know that we need to address it both now in the short term, but then also in the long term as well, and make those plans too as we think about longer term goals.
Sounds good, Sarah. Anything else? Okay, so we have a motion.
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Elise. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm wondering, so just back to my process question, because this is my whole theme for this year, right? Process, process, process. I feel like I talk about it all the time. So as far as the task force, is that something we put on a future agenda, or is that something at our summer retreat when we're looking at workshops that we're going to be addressing throughout the year, or we're looking at sort of the skeleton agendas throughout the full fiscal year and plugging things in? Is that something we would plug in there, or is that something that once we, once the state guidance and the reopening committees are more solid on where they're going, that becomes the next? I guess I'm just wondering, like, can we put it on an agenda as a placeholder, or should we just make sure that everybody's healthy in September?
Judy was going to say something then. Go ahead, Judy.
I'm a member of that group, and I thought at the meeting that we had that the understanding was that this would not be a task force for the school committee. This would be a task force that would be run under the superintendent's office, because Sarah's ability to put more of people together in this task force, and it would be much more inclusive than it would be just having the school committee do it.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I think too, what we also said was, but by having an MASC facilitator, is to say, really having a conversation about the best way to address what we have in this resolution. What is, maybe the task force is the way to go. Maybe there are other ways to go. But have a conversation where we have a chance to sit down and be deliberative and thoughtful about what is the best way to deal with this, our role as schools, as part of a community, what do we want that to look like? And when we have the MASC facilitator, we get the benefit of seeing what's happening all around the state. Can we model it, you know, after what's going on, and share the expertise of someone who's really kind of has that vision? But the other thing to speak to your point, Elise, and part of what we do have done, and if it's okay with people at our summer retreat, is we try to plan out, and this is where our accountability piece comes in. It's so important, is to say, plan out presentations and workshops throughout the year. When do we want to see results of this? What does it look like? And that's one of the things we do, which is really pretty powerful at the summer workshop, is to, and then we plan our own mini workshops and things we want to work on together as a committee. What are the things that are most pressing to us? Because we can't have all the answers now, and it really is going to be a year-long process. We can't solve it in one summer workshop, but to your point, Elise, I think that's an important way we've structured it in the past, and it really is helpful because we really do get those presentations planned out for the entire, you know, a lot of the year anyway, so. But I think with the MASC facilitator helping us this summer to really look at what that's going to look like, I think that will be helpful for us.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Good. Yeah. Anything else? I don't want to cut anyone off. All right. So we have a motion, and we have a second.
And there's a community.
Oh, sorry, I can't see it. Do we have a public comment? Anyone wishing to make a public comment? Just remember that.
Max,
okay, per policy, we would certainly listen to public comment. So, Max, wherever you are, come on board.
Hi, thank you. And I know Justin had some words he wanted to say, too.
Sure.
I think school committee member Stokes' idea of putting a placeholder after the summer retreat on the agenda, I know we have under new business the ability to add things to the agenda, or you have the ability to add things to the agenda. I think that would be appropriate. I understand your concerns about this resolution not being the best vehicle for that. I hear that. And I think, you know, our concerns would be addressed if we know that at some future date we're going to vote on this. So if someone could, you know, make a motion later at the meeting to do that, that would be great. So, and I'll defer back.
Thanks, Matt.
Ann? Sorry, I don't understand what Max just said.
Oh, can I still continue? I just.
Do you want to? You go ahead. If you wanted to repeat that, I don't want to speak for you.
So we eventually the summer working group is going to come out with a report or something, some language to adopt. And so I'm saying, well, let's put a placeholder now that can be voted on. So we know that this is something that's going to be voted on. Then we don't know what, but something regarding a task force for an anti-racism task force will be voted on that date, just so we know. Okay. We have a sense that something's going to be passed. We have a timeline, and we'd be happy with that.
Do you understand, MJ?
I have a question.
I think so.
Remember, we're just listening to comment, and we're going to take, we don't engage in dialogue at this point, but we'll listen to what Max is saying and, you know, consider future agenda items, what we want to talk about. Elise, were you going to say something?
Just to clarify, what my question was sort of just about the process, and when I had mentioned putting it on a future agenda, I meant as a discussion or an update or...
Right.
Like, I just want to know what's happening with it. So if the district is creating it, then I just, like, I was wondering, when are we going to know? It's not my understanding that there's a vote, but
there's
keep talking about this in the full school committee, as well as, you know, whoever are the school committee representatives.
Right. And that, as mentioned, that's part of what we would do as a result of the summer work, is to then say, okay, as a result of what we do, when will we talk about this and have a discussion? Will it be in, you know, the second week of September? But that's what will come, I believe, from our summer workshop, and make sure that sort of, again, we're making a commitment to make this a priority. It will become part of school committee meetings. Again, it's not something that we necessarily vote on, but it is something that once we commit to it, we will make sure that through our role as, you know, one of our important goals as a school committee, and it is one of the three goals we established, is the importance of monitoring and accountability. That's a huge piece of our mission. We do it with, the reason I brought up the whole social emotional thing is because that's what we do all the time. We do it through our school improvement plans, our district improvement plans. Where are we seeing this? What's happening with it? Getting that information through Information Matters, just like we do with the Substance Abuse Task Force. This is what we're doing. These are the things that are happening. Have room for public comment at our school committee meetings, so that this is, that there's that, that it does stay front and center as an important issue. So it will definitely be part of our meetings. And again, the reason I use the substance abuse issue was because that's the model, and that's how we're committed to it, and that's what we do. So I would just think that we've been pretty effective with that. So I don't know.
Thanks for clarifying.
Thanks, Elise. Did Justin want to speak?
Can I just clarify first before we...
Oh, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I apologize.
Go ahead, Jen.
I think my understanding is similar to Judy's, that the school committee will have a representative on the task force that will provide updates during our committee updates. So I don't want anyone to think the school committee is establishing a task force. They're all community-based task force with members of different organizations.
Exactly. If we decide to establish a task force, if that's what we decide in our summer workshop, then that's exactly, we'll follow that same model, right? Because we have one person, we have one school committee member, actually two school committee members on the substance abuse task force. And that's exactly how it would be if we go with that model. If that's what we decide is the most effective way to implement this resolution, then that's exactly what we would do. And that's good clarification, Jen. Anyone else?
Can I speak? I just had to hang.
Oh yeah, there you are. Go ahead. Yep. Sorry, I didn't see you.
Hey everyone. First, we do so appreciate the school committee for listening, and this conversation is heartening to hear, because there's obviously, like, this is like spinning in people's brains, right? This is like actually taking up time. This is taking up a lot of energy. And it's taking up a lot of energy of community members too. And I think something that Max and I have been discussing, and a lot of FAR members have been discussing, is just a commitment to action. And we understand and we appreciate that there will be action. We appreciate that there will be a future plan set forth. And we appreciate the reassurances and understand that y'all want action as much as we do. Like, there's no like vying for how much action we all want. We just worry that, like it's been spoken before, COVID will get in the way, or another budget crisis will get in the way. And what we were trying to get out of this original task force, and the task force that we proposed, was simply just accountability. And we know that there will be action, but we just wanted accountability and kind of transparency for the citizens of Franklin who care about this. And yesterday we put out a kind of a call to action. We asked people to either sign a petition urging the school committee to amend the MASC resolution, which we understand won't be happening at the meeting today, and we understand the reasons why behind that. But we also asked people to show up to the meeting, and through those two facets, we kind of received over 147 signatures, and we don't have 300 people, right? We can't pack an auditorium, but we have a virtual showing today of support, and people obviously care, right? And what we worry about is just that it gets lost in the shuffle, and we hear the reassurances that it won't get lost in the shuffle, but this is something that has been lost in the shuffle before, because white people, and I'm speaking for myself and I think a lot of the committee, white people have been kind of tiptoeing around the race issue for 400 years. Like, we're practicing for Swan Lake or something like that, right? Like, we're getting really good at it. But until we commit to action, until we commit to a plan, it's people will be continue like to knock on these meetings and come to these meetings. And we just want that. It can be a kind of a soft commitment, but we just want a commitment to accountability and transparency, and that's all we ask. And I appreciate y'all listening today. I really do. Thank you all.
Justin, appreciate it. Anyone else? School committee? I don't want to cut anybody off. Make sure everyone has a chance to speak. Okay. So we do have a motion on the table, and we have a second, so that I would ask for a vote on the motion. And all those in favor of adopting the Franklin Public School anti-racism resolution, I would do a roll call. Jen D'Angelo?
Yes.
Tim Keenan?
Yes.
Judy Ponfeffer?
Yes.
Mary Jane Schofield?
Yes.
Denise Spencer? Denise? I'll come back to Denise. Elise?
Yes. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Denise Spencer, yes. Elise Stokes? Ann Bergen, yes. Okay. Motion carries 7-0. Good. Excellent. Moving right along. Discussion only items. Dr. Hearn, opening school update.
Yes, thank you. As things are changing so rapidly, I was going to do an oral update to you this evening and then follow up with the community in written form later this week. I know people are interested in knowing what's happening on a local level with respect to opening schools. I first want to acknowledge that we are kind of understandably aware that this is a time of a lot of anxiety. People want to know what's going to happen. There's a lot of fear. We see that certainly among families who've been reaching out. We know that students are experiencing that and our staff as well. So I want to make sure that we're responsive to that, acknowledging and validating it, providing information as we are able, even if it does change, acknowledging that it may change. Just giving people the information of what we know. It is still somewhat of a fluid situation. It has been kind of this whole time. There has been a couple of different updates on information, and what's driving all of the guidance is really health statistics in the state of Massachusetts and what's happening as the phased reopening continues forward. So I don't have all of the answers, and there may be more questions than I'm able to answer at this time, but I'll share with you what I know, and it may be subject to change. So we received initial guidance from the Department of Ed on June 25th, and last week there was a first set of updates related to special education, on July 9th, special education guidance was released. And then an updated guidance document and frequently asked questions were released on July 10th. We understand that the Department of Ed will also be updating their guidance from the initial form in the midsummer timeframe. One of the things that the guidance on Friday kind of cautioned against is making a decision too early. And so we've been asked to hold off on having any decision about what the fall will look like until early August. Really in response to health and safety as the weeks unfold. So at this time, we're working to develop a plan. It's really one plan to address health and safety requirements, as well as different student learning models. We're being asked to plan for in-person instruction, hybrid instruction, which would be part in-school and part remote, and then fully remote learning model for next year. And the Department of Education has asked that we submit our plan by July 31st. So I would expect at the next school committee meeting, which is on the 28th, to have much more concrete information for you in advance of the 31st. A template is to be issued this week from the department that we would fill out for the plan. And the final guidance will be coming out from the department somewhere around the time frame when that plan is being submitted. Right now, we are planning through our reopening task force over the next couple of weeks, convening working groups to work on teaching and learning, as well as digital learning, to work on matters related to personnel, to work on whole child supports or social emotional learning, and then of course to also address the health and safety requirements and kind of operations of schools, including some of our routines, transportation, food services, and the like. As I had mentioned previously, it's a pretty large group. It's growing too. We probably have close to 60 people who are collaborating. It includes administrators, teachers and counselors, union reps, community reps such as the school resource officer, as well as the town's Department of Health lead, Kathleen Liberty. We are confirming parent and guardian involvement this week, asking principals to help connect us with some people from their school councils who are elected through the schools for governance matters. And we will seek student input as our planning shapes up. We surveyed the community, and that survey closed yesterday, so it would be premature to release any information, but it was two parts. We wanted to reflect on remote learning and gather feedback from families and staff about remote learning, using that input to improve the expectations for any remote learning model next year, recognizes that it needs to be more robust. We also, as we think about the future, wanted to seek and understand the needs of our community members. Mm-hmm. So from our faculty, we wanted to gain a sense of how many may have medical concerns that would preclude any in-person attendance. And from our families, any medical concerns for students or family members that might mean that the child's too at risk to attend school in person. Or conversely, community members who are essential workers or who have job requirements that would necessitate additional support, including in-person or extended solutions, childcare. We are also trying to assess our transportation needs and the wishes of the community with respect to busing. That is going to be one of the more complicated operational pieces to opening school, with physical distancing on buses. So we were trying to gain a sense of who might sign up for busing in advance of sending out any formal registration form. So we have some information there. And while it may seem redundant, I think as plans shape up, and we are able to provide the community with a little bit more certainty, I think we will need to issue additional surveys to understand how family needs may be changing and shifting, because their workplace requirements may change and shift. And same with our faculty in terms of the school districts that their children perhaps may attend. So we will continue to kind of seek that two-way communication as part of the planning process. And although this last survey was open for a week, I don't anticipate having that much time for future surveys. I think they'll have to be quicker with faster turnaround. And the communication will have to get a bit more concrete between families and schools and our staff and HR department. We're also really pretty excited I am anyway, and I think a number of people in the office are as well. But we've been implementing the mandatory workplace safety standards in order to open up our school offices and central office this summer. That includes physical distancing expectations, hygiene protocols, training, as well as about regular staffing and operations, about behavior within the office space, cleaning and disinfecting protocols, and then isolation and contact tracing. So it gives us an opportunity to kind of put in place some of the practices that would need to be expanded upon in the school setting. And so we have been bringing our staff members into those training sessions, and people have been coming into central office on a rotating basis. And we do have some office staff working in our schools. The offices continue to be closed to the public at this time, however, as we get our safety practices underway. We anticipate with the clearance from the Department of Public Health that once our practices are operationalized and if the health data continues to be favorable, we can open initially probably by appointment. Many of our staff, though, is continuing to work remotely where possible, and we've gotten, I think, pretty effective at it. But we will adjust based on guidance from the state and in consultation with our Board of Health. And it is such a relief, actually, to be in the office and to see a few folks, in person and face to face. And so we will be doing more of that in the coming weeks. As a matter of preparation, we're following the department's guidance with respect to PPE or personal protective equipment. Utilizing the funding that came in from the CARES Act to order disposable masks, gloves, and hand sanitizer for classrooms for our staff, some more specialized PPE for our nurses, and looking to be able to respond to the department's expectations and requirements for PPE being worn. And in the initial guidance, the requirement is students in grades 2 and up, with kindergarten and first grade being more of a local decision and encouraged by the department, and then all adults wearing masks unless there's a medical exemption that needs to be afforded. Desi has asked us to do a stress or feasibility test of our physical space. And so we took a look at our physical space to see how desks might fit in classrooms under 3 feet of distancing, if that were to be the requirement. There is also certainly consideration, as you know, being discussed where 6 feet of physical distancing has been the typical standard. So we're looking at our physical space. We are considering alternative locations for classes should that be needed, for example, in the auditorium and spacing out large classrooms in the cafeteria, auditorium, or lecture hall if needed. And so we're kind of in the initial stages of that. It's a collaborative effort. We're going to need to work with our health agent and Franklin Fire Department as well on some of those physical pieces. We are also, as I said, looking at the hybrid model or remote for in part in-school learning and part remote learning. So those are being actively worked on by working groups in advance of that July 31st date. We have not determined from a hybrid perspective what the best model would be to break students up into cohort groups where some are in attendance and some are remote and then they switch. We're looking at that. A big factor there is the cleaning protocols and how much time it would require and take to clean, particularly the high school. The high school is a really big facility and has a lot of square feet, so that cannot be done quickly. So I would rule out any morning session, afternoon session, because I just don't think we would have enough time to clean and disinfect the building if that were to be the model. Mm-hmm. There were a few questions that a few people asked over the course of the week from the school committee after I sent out, over the course of the past couple weeks, since I sent the initial guidance your way, so I'm happy to address some of those. There was information in the guidance related to a level service budget plus, and so what did the commissioner mean with respect to finances there? And what this means is providing financial support on top of the district's projected budget, although he recognizes in the frequently asked questions document that he came out with, the legislature is still developing FY21. But I think what he was pointing to is that the governor made money available in two forms of grants. One is a per pupil expense grant where we will have some additional money to support things that are needed for going back to school. And the other is a grant related to technology and being able to provide more technology in a matching system where they would match a percentage based on our Chapter 70. The percent that they contribute to Chapter 70, they would match to support some technology needs. So we're keeping keeping attuned to those. Miriam has been attending some Department of Ed webinars and understanding the application requirements for those. But basically, it was a recognition that more support would be needed from the state compared to what came in from the federal government through the CARES funding initially a couple months ago. I talked already a little bit about the cohorts and the hybrid model. We are thinking about ways in which to limit the group interactions over the course of the day and the number of adults that are working with groups of students and the interactions that adults might have. We typically do have multiple adults in one classroom at times. So there are some things to plan for that. There was some reference in the Department of Ed's guidance to space in the community and could community space be used in order to instruct students. And just by way of example, in other communities, for example, the Boys and Girls Club has come forward and offered spaces to school districts to hold school. I'm not sure that we will be seeking community spaces. I think our high school is a challenge with respect to the number of students in our high school building in terms of having about 1,750 students. But with our capacity study being done by the architects, you know, we do have a decreased enrollment K-8. We do have, I think, a little bit of space that could be utilized in our K-8 buildings pretty effectively. But our concern would really be around staffing in terms of physical coverage of staffing if we spread students out, which I've mentioned here before. One question that is coming up a lot is around the ability for families to homeschool their children instead of sending their students to the Franklin Public Schools. So I wanted to be sure to make a distinction between remote learning and homeschool. And homeschool has been in place for quite some time as an alternative choice that families can exercise that would actually unenroll their child from the local school district, and the family takes responsibility for the child's education. There is a process by which the family applies, and Dr. Edwards, as the Assistant Superintendent for Teaching and Learning, reviews homeschool plans. The family takes the responsibility for curriculum, instruction, assessment, and materials, and has to seek approval. Dr. Edwards reviews that to make sure that the plan that the family has put forward is comparable in breadth and depth of a typical curriculum, but they do not need to follow the state frameworks, and they could actually teach, you know, make different choices. It just has to be comparable. So it's a very independent approach. There, we recognize that there are some families who may need to, for medical reasons, opt into a fully remote environment. And state guidance has discussed how families should make this choice in consultation with medical providers, and that we will need to consider this as it relates to our attendance policies. Remote learning or going fully remote may be an option, but it is distinct from homeschool, where remote learning would be under the responsibility of Franklin Public Schools. And I expect more clarity to come later about that. So that's a bit of our update. We are very actively planning and working towards having an initial plan. It will not be the final plan July 31st, but an initial plan for July 31st to submit to the state. And I think you can expect another update at the July 28th meeting. Happy to answer any questions. I'm sure there's
any questions from the group? Questions from the committee? Sarah, I just had one quick question, and I know this would be part of what you're considering. I just was in the event, let's say they were saying that possibly things could get worse with the sort of in Massachusetts or any of the states, given the flu season and things getting worse. Is there a line drawn that where it would automatically shift back to remote learning? Is that something that's being considered? I was just curious about that.
Yeah, I think that that's something that we need to be prepared for. And yeah. Part of the ultimate plan will include kind of the criteria that we will use in making decisions yeah. about whether or not to go back to remote learning fully and how that will be communicated. So that would be part of, part of the more comprehensive plan, not the July 31st plan, I don't think,
sure.
but a more comprehensive plan before school opens. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just had one other quick question about the use of the building. I know over the summer, families register new students, to come into the, is that something they would do by appointment to go to central office? Where do they go if they want to register right now for,
So we have built an online registration system, and the link is on our website. So we did that as part of the remote process. It's also a way to change addresses. So if there's been a change in address, that form is it's a combined form and can be completed. And it initially goes to our assistants in the central office, and then there is a follow-up piece at the school level with school-based secretaries for further information. But a lot of that can now be done online. There may be a need for in-person registration later in the summer, and we can communicate out about when we're ready for that. But at this point, we are registering and welcome new students and new families through the online system.
Good.
And if anybody's having trouble with that, just make a phone call to the superintendent's office, and we can also talk people through by the phone.
Excellent. Good. Any other questions, committee? Okay.
And I have a question.
Oh, go ahead, Elise. Sorry.
That's okay. Sarah, I'm just wondering if with the task force of 60 people, definitely a huge group, but obviously you need people that are expert in so many different areas. That's so important because you have the subcommittees. I'm wondering on the, if they're sort of piggybacking off of what you did in the superintendent's conference today with Jessica Manahan and the SEL and trauma piece, as far as the counselors. So are there counselors as part of that task force and sort of representing each grade level? Because I think school adjustment or social emotional concerns or questions are so different high school than they are in preschool or kindergarten. Were there counselors? You said teachers and counselors, and so I didn't know if that meant teachers at each level, counselors at each level, or if it's, I guess I'm just sort of curious about the roles of the people.
Yeah, so we tried to do teachers and counselors from different levels. We don't have one from each level from a counseling perspective, but we do have an elementary counselor and a secondary school psychologist. But each building principal is also developing their own team for school-wide implementation and bringing communication to and from the larger group to be thinking about school-based implementation. So there is a lot of involvement, I think, across the district from various groups by different levels involving educators and counselors.
Gotcha. So then the principals are on the big task force?
The principals and assistant principals are as well, all of whom have previous experience in the classroom or as counselors or special educators themselves.
Okay, gotcha. And then a question for you, and then I guess through the chair to the rest of the school committee, have you considered if there's a role for school committee members? I know we're all so much free time in our lives trying to do another committee, but just sort of wondering your thoughts on having school committee representation on the task force.
Yeah, so I would welcome school committee representation on the task force. I think initially when this was being sort of communicated and developed, we were getting the sense that it was going to be more dictated at the state level and wasn't quite sure how much local discretion we were going to be able to have. But that seems to be shifting a bit. And I think that's part of how Massachusetts is set up from a governance standpoint. And as you get into more and more of the details, I mentioned earlier, for example, the attendance policy, you know, there's a lot from a policy standpoint that is within your purview. There's going to be handbook changes, for example, Judy brought up transportation and cleaning and disinfecting of the buses. So there is quite a bit at the local level that we are in a position of responding to kind of statewide expectations. But there is more work, I think, locally than perhaps was initially sort of being communicated or thought about. So I would welcome a school committee school committee representation on the committee.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly whatever people want. I mean, certainly, I know one of the reasons we initially said we maybe didn't need it was because Sarah was going to be providing full updates to the committee frequently. But I certainly would welcome if someone would want to be represent the school committee, if you'd let me know, that would be great. And you could let me know, and then that would be through me to appoint. So if you're interested, just please send me an email. And I will certainly follow through. Sound okay?
Yep. Thanks,
Dan. Okay. I guess anything else, school committee at all? Any other questions, comments? Okay. Let's do BICO quarterly report, Dr. Ahern.
Just for information, sometimes want to share with you what's going on with our collaborative. So BICO sent a quarterly report. I always include the annual report for both of our collaboratives, but included BICO's report. And if you have any questions, I may be able to answer them or could get back to you on that.
Does anyone have any questions on BICO?
Nope.
Seeing none. Okay. Moving right along. Very good. Information matters. Budget subcommittee, I think we're going to need to set up a meeting. I don't think we have one scheduled, do we? My mind's kind of gone.
No.
But maybe we can do that to at least set it up sometime. I'll connect and we can set up a meeting through Sarah. Okay, sound good. Denise, how about community relations, MASC? What do you have for us?
So community relations, we met on July 6th. And we sent out our latest newsletter last week. I wanted to come to the rest of the committee and ask if you had any ideas of what you'd like included in future newsletters. If you could just send me an email. No suggestion is too small. Let's see, what else? Farmers market. We're going to be trying to set up meet and greets again now that they're up and running. So more info to follow on that.
Sure.
And it's pretty quiet from MASC other than the resolutions. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yep. Good. Thanks, Denise. The newsletter really did a good job. And Anne-Marie Tracy did a great job, didn't she? Yeah.
It was
so well done. It was just it was really good. And to see it out there in the community, it was
yes.
Good.
She's going to hate me. Soon enough.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But she's great.
Yeah. Facilities analysis. Elise.
Hi, I don't have a lot to report this week. I think there's been so much going on in so many other places. We need to finalize our questionnaire and get it out to families, but we want to be sensitive with all the other questionnaires going out, and there's been some change in building administration and some other things that we just need to stagger the amount of information that's going home to families. So we're going to set up a meeting soon, and I'll have a report next school committee meeting for you.
Sounds good.
Wait,
thank you.
Can I ask
yes, Denise, then Jen. Go ahead, Denise, then Jen.
I just wanted to ask, so for the questionnaire, did we ever decide, so are we doing like one questionnaire for everyone, or are we splitting it up?
Can I answer, Andrew?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Elise. Yep.
We're doing one, but the first question is, what's your role? Are you a current DT parent? Are you a community member, et cetera?
Okay, thank you.
Jen, go ahead. Sorry.
I just was curious, did we end up getting the report yet?
No. No.
Sorry.
Go ahead, through the chair.
I can address where we are with the report. The central office team, I wanted to have the administrators take a look at the report, both just from a communication standpoint as well as a fact-checking standpoint before it goes public to the school committee, even through the subcommittee. So the central office team met with the architect last week, and we're looking to set something up for principals. And then from there, it'll go to the subcommittee.
Is that traditional practice?
So I would say yes, just from a communication standpoint, giving them the opportunity to make sure that it's factually accurate. I would say that it would be.
The only reason I say that is because I feel like, time-wise, it's kind of delaying, and I know that this has been a hot topic. So to look at, you know, another 2 weeks to kind of vet it through the district, I would just be concerned with that and not getting it to the subcommittee. But again, you know, the timeline is really, I don't even know what to say about the timeline, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jen. Anything else on that for that one? Okay, let's move on, MJ, to policy.
Okay, we did meet on July 8th. You will be seeing more policies come to you, and we do not have a date set for our next meeting. I'm very sorry to say that, because I know everyone looks forward to hearing about it.
Yes. Okay. That's good. Thanks. And then just on the ad hoc superintendent evaluation committee, we'll be meeting this week, and really kind of a two-pronged process. And as I mentioned earlier in the year, we kind of extended things a little bit because, which is happening with superintendents across the state, because sort of all of the lofty goals that Sarah had in place, and there were many of them, given all of the other things thrown at her, that they're sort of, she's looking at sharing with us some of the ways she's sort of revised and things she's homed in on. So to look at the goals this week, and then also to the process of doing the evaluation over the last two times doing it, and MJ can speak to it, is we've kind of simplified it a bit. So what I would suggest, as I suggested earlier, is once Sarah's goals are narrowed down, is that we have sort of a mini workshop, maybe like say an hour before one of the school committee meetings, where we just kind of talk about the process. So everyone's on the same page. We've really kind of simplified it and made it pretty easy. And as I was mentioning, is that Franklin School Committee was identified as one of the top five in the state for the effectiveness and the way the superintendent evaluation is done. You can check it out on the website and see the interview there. But so I think MJ and I maybe can kind of talk people through how the process works, and if we do a little mini workshop just before. Makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's that. I don't think we met. I don't think any of the other things have been meeting over the summer, so I don't need to go. I think Joint PCCs and all the and no. SWAC, they're all going to start up again in the fall, so we can let those go. I don't skip anybody. Okay. So on to new business. Dr. Hearn.
Well, I anticipate at the next meeting that we will talk more about reopening and the plan that's shaping up.
Yeah.
I think that we may have a budget update with the tax deadline for tomorrow, as well as, you know, kind of towards the end of the month, we may have some additional information from the state, perhaps. I don't think we will have firm numbers, but may have a little bit of an indication of where things are headed from a budget standpoint. And I think second read for some of those policies. I just want to mention at the last meeting, I had talked about the annual report, which is typically due in August. That has been extended into September. So the annual report due to the town is not due until September at this point. So I didn't put it forward for tonight's agenda and don't necessarily think it needs to come forward at the next meeting, but certainly would provide you with an opportunity to look at it in August. We typically include budget information in there, and if we're still a little unsure from the state where our budget stands, it makes sense that it's a bit delayed, and we'll adjust it accordingly. But we will provide you with an opportunity to review it and give feedback before it goes to the town for publication, and that deadline was extended.
And that's the one, Sarah, the school committee usually submits a what we've been doing as well, right?
Yes.
The last few years. And
yes,
that's something that I typically do and then send out to the full committee before it goes anywhere to see if I've said everything correctly, if I've put things in there that you want to make sure are put in there. So that's something that I will do and then get out to you for approval and make sure it looks okay before it goes into the town report. Just the things that we've been doing and the different activities, the subcommittees of the school committee, so the community is aware of the work that we're doing in all those different areas. So I'll do that. Okay, I guess that's it on that one. Next, we go to consent agenda. Dr. Hearn.
Okay. I recommend approval of the minutes from the June 23rd, 2020 school committee meeting as detailed. I recommend acceptance of a check for $1,000 from the Franklin Country Club for an FHS scholarship as detailed, and I recommend acceptance of a check for $805 from the JFK PCC for supplemental supplies as detailed.
Good. Okay, is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So moved.
Okay, thanks, Judy.
I was waiting in case anybody...
I know. Good, thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
And that is MJ. Okay, so Judy, MJ. So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion. And again, we love these roll call votes. Jen D'Angelo.
Yes.
Tim Keenan.
Yes.
Judith Bonfeffer.
Yes.
And Mary Jane Schofield.
Yes.
Denise Spencer.
Yes.
Elise Stokes.
Yeah.
Ann Bergen, yes. Okay, consent agenda approved, 7-0. Alrighty, now payment of bills. I did review the bills. Everything is in order. Payroll, Jen?
I did review payroll. Payroll's in order.
All right. So at this point, I think unless anyone has any other comments, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. And then again, this is for the purpose of going into executive session. We will not be returning to discuss strategy with respect to collective bargaining. So at this time, I will entertain a motion to adjourn for the purpose of going into executive session. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Thanks, Judy. Second?
Second.
Okay, MJ. All right. And again, roll call vote to go into executive session. Jen D'Angelo?
Yes.
Tim Keenan?
Yes.
Judy Pfeffer?
Yes.
Mary Jane Schofield?
Yes.
Denise Spencer?
Yes.
And Elise Stokes?
Yeah.
And Ann Bergen, yes. Okay, so at this point, the meeting will be adjourned. We will be going and not returning. And then I guess at this point, Sarah, we'll all stay on.
We can stay
okay.
Here. Okay, yep.
So we'll do that, and we'll see you on the other side.
Okay.
Okay.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.